We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson, and I'm joined this week by Dylan White, who does really good work for Prospects Live. Used to just kind of do his own thing on Twitter with the formula in all caps. But Dylan is really great at kind of pinpointing breakout prospects early in the season. And so I'm going to have him on to talk about breakouts and which ones we're really buying in on. But first, Dylan, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Happy to be here as always, James.
Yeah, man, this is we got to do this over the off season, and great to have you back. Before we get into some specific players, why don't you kind of just tell people like sort of what you've been doing over at Prospects Live?
Yeah, so the formula that you referred to is now called RoboScout, patent pending. the pitching version is called ThroboScout. Basically, I take it's results based, stats based. I apply park factors, I regress. I think generally appropriately, and then I rank them. There's an age adjustment as well, and it spits out a number from 0 to 100. I'll be using that heavily in this podcast. We're about to release our top 500 update. I know you're working on yours. I don't know how you managed to keep up with it because it's just a nightmare just for me, and I don't know how you do it for years. But that's what we're working on now. That should be coming out, hopefully this weekend, maybe next week.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's so challenging to do these updates in season, right? But I think this is the hardest update of the entire year. This first in season update. Would you agree with that?
I don't really have much to go on, but it's sure. Definitely difficult. Exactly like you say, like which results do you buy in on? What do you do about the DSL guys who haven't played yet, or who are supposed to come stateside, haven't started the complex league? You don't want to overreact. You don't want to underreact. Obviously, everyone wants to know what the experts think. And so there's a lot of pressure in that way. Maybe that doesn't apply to you, but it does definitely for me. I feel a responsibility. so it's, I don't know. I as you know, I analyze things to death maybe. And so it's always like proximity versus age versus recent history versus in the past, et cetera, et cetera. And I just like go crazy just trying to figure out how to rank those.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. And part of the reason why I'm not doing my first in-season update until the end of this month is I don't want to kind of lead people astray. It's certainly speculating season. You know, you can spec on these breakout guys, but we're still dealing with such a small sample that one prospect having a really good or a really bad next 2 weeks is going to drastically shift the way that their season stats look. So it's so challenging to try to not overreact while also react positively on some of the guys that you are really buying. But we're going to break down, 10 or so of those guys that are off to great starts that you and I are both really buying into. And hopefully that gives people some targets to add in free agency while they're awaiting these prospect rankings updates. Dylan, why don't you start things off and give us one prospect whose early start is something that you're really buying into?
So the guy I like, and Eddie Almaguer, and I just did a podcast on Monday, Dynasty Podcast, and I mentioned him as a potential the Anthony Volpe of this year, is Ezekiel Tovar from Colorado. Shortstop, double A, 20 years old, I believe. He's always been a defense first guy, so anyone who's good defense up the middle is going to have a long leash, going to have a better chance to make it to the majors as well. But this year, he's kind of reined in the free swinging. He had a very low walk rate last year, but this year he's up to like 11 or 12%. He's 300, 400, 500 type of like major league equivalency based on how he's performing now. Speed, power, 2020. Like, I like everything I'm seeing. Very young for the level. He's my breakout, my number one breakout guy right now.
Yeah, really the only thing that doesn't pop with him is the hard hit data that I have and that we have on rotowire.com. Do you guys have any other hard hit data on him that kind of gives you some confidence in the breakout being legitimate?
Not this year. We don't have the access to StatCast this year, but I do like a expected barrel rate based on a number of the available stats, and his number is popping compared to last year. At least his exit velocities last year were kind of middling, even for his age. But his expected barrel rate has gone up.
Yeah, and our hard hit data, it's a useful tool. I definitely don't think it is the be all end all. I mean, it's not perfect data, and so it's pretty bad. But I think if you just kind of look at everything you referenced in terms of the improvements, it's really hard to sort of poke holes in it. And you don't need Tovar to be a 30 homer hitter for him to be a great fantasy option because of that speed, because of the home park. And I'm kind of blown away by his season so far, because really struggled after that promotion to high A last year, struggled in the AFL. I know that he wasn't, it was a small sample in the AFL and everything, and he was working on some things, but still, that's such a hitter friendly environment that typically guys who really struggle there are going to struggle then the next season, but not the case with him at all.
Yeah, the one thing that I've noticed in the last couple of weeks is his strikeout rate is kind of creeping up slowly. So I'm hoping that's just the league's starting to make some adjustments, and seeing how he'll bounce back is what I'm going to be watching.
And he's definitely a classic guy where it's just like, I want to see, like, give me 70, 80 more plate appearances, and just let me see where this sort of settles, because if he were to keep up this level of production or something close to this over 2 or 3 months, I mean, that would be pretty impressive just given his age. I mean, he doesn't turn 21 until August, so really handling a challenging assignment here. My first guy is someone who's sort of similar a little bit, I guess, to Tovar, but a much more well-known player, former number one overall pick, Royce Lewis. I'm all in on what I've seen from Royce Lewis so far. I think there's a case that he is back to being a top 10 overall prospect for dynasty leagues. There's nothing really that you can sort of poke into his start to the year statistically, walking almost as much as he's striking out, which is just not something I ever thought I would say about Royce Lewis at any level. And that's what's happening right now. And he's quieted down his big leg kick. He's really elevating with intent. I think it's a career low ground ball rate and close to a career high pull rate. So he's really launching to left field, and he's got big time power. Like, I think people think of Royce Lewis as sort of a speedster that's maybe kind of like a 15 homer, 20 homer guy. Like, he's got big time bat speed. He's gotten really strong since entering pro ball, and I think, you know, he kind of has some similarities to me with Byron Buxton, almost in a way where maybe he enters the league and it's all about the steals. But then by the time he's 26, 27, 28, people are drafting him because they know they're getting 30 homer upside there. So I love everything I've seen from Royce Lewis so far this year.
I totally agree. He's in RoboScout right now. He has an 89 in AAA, and it's like seventh in the league. If you're above 80, you're basically you're good to go. Yeah, everything you said, I really like it. Just excited to see what he's going to do with Byron Buxton and Jose Miranda and all those guys. Kirilov, hopefully, if he comes back, it'll be an exciting Twins team.
Yeah, and I've been getting a lot of questions about, like, when is Lewis going to be up? I do think it is stashing season on him in deeper leagues, but if I were the Twins, I don't think I would even be thinking about promoting him over the next few weeks. I think he missed so much time, and this start to the season has just been so great. I would just kind of want to let him keep building these positive results and really, like, keep getting into this rhythm that he's in, and don't do something that's going to kind of interrupt this season until he gets, you know, 200, 250 plate appearances at AAA. So I think it is stashing season on him. I just wouldn't expect him to be up until June or July. And he's obviously versatile enough defensively that, kind of unlike Jose Miranda, Miranda's kind of limited defensively to only a few spots. Lewis could play anywhere. So I think once they think he's ready, odds are there will be a spot where he can help the big league team, and he might even gain multi-position eligibility.
Good. Do you have an idea where you think he'll play? Do you think he'll be second, third, left field? Like,
I think third base makes some sense. I mean, he'd be an elite left fielder defensively. But I really think it's just going to kind of come down to sort of where the biggest opening is for them. And they can move him around too. Like, they can give Carlos Correa a day off every few weeks. They can give Polanco a day off every few weeks. They can even play him in center field to put Buxton at DH or something like that every now and then. So I think his bat is what's going to kind of get him up, and then I think he'll just kind of play wherever the opening is. Okay, so who is your next breakout that you are buying into?
I'm going to do another Colorado Rocky shortstop. This time, I don't know if I can pronounce it right, but Adiel Amador. I remember when he signed in the international signings, Ben Badler was kind of big on him, but no one else in the industry was as high on him, and he kind of just slipped through the cracks. But right now he's and one more thing is, last year, so we had the Statcast data last year, one of my favorite graphs I do even in the majors is contact percentage on, like, the x-axis and exit velocity on the y-axis. So I use 75th percentile exit velocity, and for an 18-year-old, he was in, so you want to be in the top right, contact and good quality of contact, and he was in the top right for an 18-year-old. He was kind of right beside James Triantos. So obviously that had me have my eye on him. And now this year it seems like it's kind of actualizing and coming to fruition. He looks like a 300 hitter, like 280 hitter with, like, big massive power, maybe not as much speed, but definitely liking what he's doing right now.
Yeah, where do you, like, what have you seen video on him? Like, what would you guess he measures in at right now?
In terms of his body, like, shape?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have seen video of the swing, but I am not very good at.
I guess I'm just trying to figure out sort of, is he going to be sort of a middle of the order power hitter? Is that kind of?
I think so.
What the hope is going to be with him? Yeah. I mean, I think that would be really exciting, and. You know, even teams as dumb as the Rockies, you know, if you sign enough guys, some of them are going to break out every now and then. So that's interesting that we're opening it up with a couple of Rockies guys, but dig that. And Amador, I think in a lot of dynasty leagues, is probably still out there. The first two guys we talked about, Ezekiel Tovar, Royce Lewis, I would assume are long gone in any kind of competitive dynasty league, but I'm sure in deeper leagues, Amador was probably rostered even coming into the year, but there's probably some where he's available. My next guy, talked about him a little bit on last week's episode, but really been impressed with Cal Mitchell with the Pirates. And I noticed he hadn't played. He hasn't played in like 5 days or something. So I wonder if he's a little banged up. I couldn't find anything on that, but he just checks a lot of boxes. I mean, he is 23, but he's at AAA. He's got just as many walks as strikeouts, and the strikeout rate's under 12%, which is really insane, even given how bad the pitching is at AAA relative to the big leagues. And he's made a point of emphasis to run more this year. I think he took issue with the fact that he was sort of seen as this no speed corner outfielder and already 4-for-4 on stolen base attempts. And he's really checking the boxes, the hard hit data on our site. He's popping there, 38%, which is excellent. And obviously the team context, you know, Royce Lewis, it's like, where is he going to play with Cal Mitchell? I mean, he could be up any day now, really, as long as he's healthy, because I think there are definitely some spots where they could upgrade in that outfield. What have you thought of Mitchell's start?
I do like Mitchell. He is an 86 on RoboScout, which is also very good for AAA. I've always had a soft spot for Jack Suwinski, who they called up. He hasn't really done much, but I do like him. RoboScout's always liked him too. But yeah, I like the Cal Mitchell call. We're in our top 500 update. We have him moving. I think I heard you say you have him like maybe 120-ish. We're kind of in the same ballpark. Just maybe 175 to 200 area, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I'd love for him to just get back in action here. Hopefully he's not injured seriously or anything like that. But I'd love to get a larger sample to work with on Cal Mitchell, because it's extremely impressive, but it's still just 69 plate appearances. So, you know, he could get back in the lineup today or tomorrow and go on a rough patch, and then all of a sudden his season doesn't look all that outstanding. But you know, if we're just analyzing small samples, Cal Mitchell's small sample is right up there. Who's the next guy that you want to highlight?
So I have another shortstop, at least currently playing shortstop. That's where the Cardinals have him now. It's Mason Wynn. RoboScout has him with a 100 in high A.
Damn.
He's super tooled up, athletic, huge arm, since he also pitched. Massive speed. He's got 11 stolen bases, no caught stealing, strikeouts and walks basically flat. 14% walk rate, 17% strikeout rate, low ground ball rate. It's just kind of, again, he's kind of actualizing everything that they'd hoped for. Maybe the hit tool is the one that you'd be most concerned of, but it looks like he's definitely showing well right now. So Mason Wynn.
Yeah, I love that call. Was a huge fan of Wynn heading into that draft. And there had been like kind of conflicting reports here and there at different points of his pro career about whether or not they were going to still develop him as a pitcher. But love that they've sent him out as a shortstop again this year, even after he struggled a little bit at high A, but he was 19 then. And he's, you know, he's only hit 6 homers in pro ball, but he does have some raw power that he's eventually going to tap into a bit more in games, I believe. So I don't think this is just, you know, speed, batting average, on base, and that's it. I do think there is some juice in that bat. And yeah, I mean, the upward trajectory with Wynn right now, I mean, who knows where I'll have him ranked, but I would assume if he kind of keeps this up, it'll be top 75, something like that. Where are you guys going to slot him? Do you know?
Basically, kind of the same spot, inside the top 100 at the 75 area, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, he's got the type of tools that are incredibly valuable in fantasy. So really, sky's the limit with him over the next year and a half. Okay. Going to get to another one of my favorite breakouts this year, but first, a message from our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, we're back. This next guy was someone that I was pretty bullish on for first-year player drafts, but he's just even further surpassed that. Granted, I do believe he is banged up right now, but Kyle Manzardo, the Rays sent him to high A, and that was a pretty aggressive assignment for the Rays. I mean, they typically send their college draftees, they'll just send them to low A and it'll be a slow upward move. But yeah, it's a bummer that he's banged up right now, but was pretty perfect, albeit in a tiny sample at high A. So I think if you ended up with Manzardo, I would hold there for sure. We don't have to spend a ton of time on him though, just given the small sample on his season. Do you have any thoughts on Manzardo before we move on?
No, I like what you said. Super good hit tool. RoboScout has him as an 86 at high A, which is excellent as well.
Nice. I'm loving this. I hope I don't mention someone where all of a sudden it's like, yeah, RoboScout's got him as a 52. Okay, who's your next guy?
My next guy is Luis Garcia of Washington.
Yep.
I've always liked him in our RotoWire startup draft dynasty that we did. I took him, and Matt Eddy immediately DM'd saying I sniped him. So I'm happy about that. Just he's always shown up on RoboScout or the formula because he's always been young for the level. He's still only 22 right now, which blows my mind.
He hasn't even turned 22 yet. He's,
is that right?
He turns 22 in less than 2 weeks.
Even better.
Crazy.
And it totally shocks me, but like on the podcast I was referring to earlier that I talked with Eddie, I kind of see like a DJ LeMahieu type profile. Like they both have kind of high ground ball rates, good hit tool, good contact. So, you know, like 280 to 300 in a good solid year with, you know, maybe up 20 home runs he gets into. Not much speed, but just solid production all around. And he's so young, he'll be doing it for a long time. That's kind of what I hope.
Well, how's he ever gonna break through when they have Alcides Escobar and just Alcides Escobar playing shortstop? How's he gonna get a shot?
It's going to be difficult. Definitely going to be difficult. they brought up D. Strange Gordon. I don't know if you caught that while you're on vacation, and sent down Lucius Fox. So they're trying to do something. I just can't see that it's Luis Garcia is the answer.
That's so funny. I mean, how can a guy that's like, there's really nothing that he could do at AAA really that would like impress us any more than we already are impressed with him, right? It's basically just he has to get back up to the majors and we have to see if he can kind of get over this hurdle against big league pitching.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I don't know why they're not giving him the chance. Maybe they think that his confidence will get shot or something, but they're definitely slow playing him for some reason.
And I think Luis Garcia is kind of almost a perfect test case for just the gap between AAA and big league pitching, because everything in his statistical profile would suggest that he should hit the ground running against big leaguers. Has the strikeout rate under 14%. Young for the level. Just incredibly productive so far. But I do think that gap is still just so massive that I don't think he is a sure thing to hit this next time. I hope he does. I think he should at least be someone that you can deploy in deeper 15 team and deeper leagues once he's playing every day. But it's just going to be interesting to see how this type of production from a 21-year-old who's about to turn 22, how that does end up translating against big league pitching.
Yeah, I mean, like Clay Davenport and Jordan Rosenblum picked up the torch. Their major league equivalencies say the gap between AAA and the majors is like 30 points in WRC+. You just subtract. He's a 165 right now, which would suggest 135 because of the small sample. And if he regressed it, you know, he's maybe around a 130. So that becomes league average hitter at the age of 21/22. So he definitely showing the signs that historically he's performing at a rate that would be at least league average at the age of 22. So I can't see how he'd fail.
Okay. My next guy is John Rhodes with the Orioles. Interested to hear what RoboScout has to say about him, but I really think like people would have expected this exact line from his teammate Colton Cowser, who I believe is actually a tiny bit older than Rhodes, but they're from the same draft, right? Cowser was the big money first rounder. Cowser is a few months older. Rhodes went in the third round, and he's the one with the elite strikeout rate and the walk rate of 12%, and he's hitting for average. He's hitting for some power. I think he's got power is kind of going to be his carrying tool, I believe. But it's interesting. I mean, he might be a pure hitter as well. I definitely think we need to see him at Double A at some point this year to kind of get a real test. But you know, the O's have been pretty good at developing hitters over the past few years, especially guys that they targeted after the first round of the draft. And I think Rhodes, I mean, he's just been so good. And it's just so interesting to compare and contrast him and Cowser, given the pedigree and just the gap in production this season.
Yeah, so RoboScout has Cowser as a 54 at the level and Rhodes as an 87. And then Connor Norby, who I think was in the same draft, is a 75. So Cowser's doing the worst of those three. Eddie and I talked about John Rhodes too. So there's commonality here of these breakouts that we believe in. I kind of likened him to like Avisail Garcia, kind of, you know, 15 homers, 15 stolen bases, solid average, like not jumping out, not killing your team, but not, you know, blowing away and giving you championships, but definitely a useful player. So I like that call.
Yeah, I think Avi makes some sense to me. I mean, I think the power, I think maybe like 20 to 30 homers at peak and then maybe like 8 to 10 steals. Like he's a good athlete for his size, but he's pretty big. So I don't see him being like a 15 to 20 steal guy. But I like the idea of that just sort of on-base threat who's going to hit, you know, 20-plus homers. But, yeah, like I said, Double-A is going to be the big test. And with a guy like Cowser, like he's another example of why, you know, doing a fresh set of rankings right now is just so dangerous because it's like how much do you punish someone like that for this slow start to the season? Do you guys bump him like – you know, is he still like a comfortably inside the top like 150 for you guys, do you think?
Let's see here. So it's an aggregate of me, Matt Thompson, Eddie, and Justin Dunbar. And it looks like I haven't put mine in, but the three of them are in the 60 to 70 range.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I don't know where they had him before the season, but yeah. That's even higher than I think I had him before the season. So, yeah, I mean, that's basically. Just full buy-in that this is just a small sample fluke on Cowser. But, I mean, I'm looking at that 34% strikeout rate. He should be dominating this level. You know, number five overall pick from college. I mean, this is where Sal Frelick and Henry Davis got assigned. And They're handling those assignments just fine. I mean, I think Kowser, if he told anyone that was high on him before the season that he was going to go back to high A, they would say that he would just kick the door down, but hasn't really been the case. So I need more data. I want to see more plate appearances from him before deciding where to rank him.
Yeah, it looks like we had him in the mid-40s, and so okay. It's a bit of a slip down to the 70s.
So who's your next guy?
So I went to the mound now. So I got, I hope I don't mispronounce this one too, but Brian Fellows, Boston Red Sox, 23-year-old, AA, I think repeating it. Just he's so we had the Statcast last year. And so what I did, Jeff Ponce and I, is we'd look at like the average X WOBA's average X whiff percentage, et cetera. And I assigned like a 20 to 80 grade compared to league average. So his, and I wrote a series of articles on pitch arsenals. So Brian Bellows, three pitch mix was a four seamer. That was a 55 X WOBA, 50 whiff percentage. So average, but he throws 96 miles an hour. He's got the above average, like flat VAA, like VAA to the good side. His slider was a 55-60 plus velocity plus spin, and his changeup was a 55-65. So he has, using my metrics, he has three above average to plus pitches, and he's just doing the same thing. He's even dominating even further now in Double A. So, and if you look at Steamer 600 now, his numbers at the age of 23 without any major league experience are basically the same as Ian Anderson in terms of WHIP ERA, though a bit fewer Ks at the age of 23. So without even throwing a pitch in the majors, he's already projected to do that. I mean, sometimes they're not the most accurate minor leaguers using Steamer, but just kind of give you an idea of what he can do. So I think he can stick as a starter. He throws mid to high 90s. His control is good. His ground balls are good. He's my big guy right now.
That's a great call, because a lot of people have been asking about him. Yeah, I mean, I wonder, do you think he's more of a in the majors next year type of guy, or could he just force the issue later this summer?
I mean, it's tough. Like the way they're handling Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock, like they're not really sure what they're doing with them. And then Chris Sale's going to be back. Like, are they in the bullpen or are they starters? Are they five and dive? Are they the followers? Who knows? Are they the closer? Like Whitlock has gotten a save. So I would think, all things being equal, he would be up this year. But I'm not really sure how they're handling these guys. Walk is doing well. Pavetta isn't doing well, but his metrics aren't as bad as he's showing. They could use him for sure. I wouldn't stash him for redraft.
Mm-hmm. And of course you could just come up as a weapon out of the pen, like a multi-inning relief weapon this year, and then get stretched back out next year, and he could help them in the playoffs in that type of role. So even if he did come up, not a guarantee to be in a fantasy friendly role. Okay, my next guy is also a pitcher, Gordon Graceffo, with the St. Louis Cardinals. That's Graceffo. He was the 151st pick in last year's draft, and friend of the show, Nate Handy, was telling me about how great he thought Graceffo looked, and I went and did some digging, and I came away very impressed. The fastball is a big time weapon. He throws three secondary pitches, all pretty good movement. He's just a guy that generates whiffs, really competitive. I like a lot of his sort of intangibles on the mound. And Cardinals, I mean, that's a great org to be a pitching prospect in. And he's 22. He's at high A. He's absolutely dominating there. So I don't know how much longer he's going to be there. Maybe they get him up to like 10, 12 starts at high A before giving them the bump to double A. But Gordon Graceffo, I think, could move pretty quickly. Starter all the way for me. And, you know, these types of pitching prospects that just kind of pop up out of nowhere, but, not a guy that I think was rostered in many dynasty leagues coming into the year. These types of guys, I think you gotta act quick, especially when they're the college types that can move quickly to the majors.
Yeah, I just picked him up actually in my 20-team OBP dynasty last week. He's the guy that was throwing 100 in spring training. Is that right?
Was he? Maybe, you don't know. Man,
I thought he was. I thought Jeff Ponce had an article about him doing that. I don't know what else he needs to do in high A. He's thrown 27 innings already. His walk rate is 2%. He's got a 0.51 whip. I mean, this is why I picked him up. Robo Scouts all over him. Did I tell you the number? 87. When I looked at his Statcast last year, using those same metrics, his two seamer was a 65/50. So I call that, you know, above average. His slider was 60 X Woba, 60 whiffs. So that's plus. His curveball was 55/50. So average to above average, and his changeup was 50/60. So he's got four pitches that are average or above, which is definitely a recipe for making it in the rotation. Probably, possibly mid rotation, like you said. Cardinal magic is real for pitchers and hitters. So I love that call, and like I said, I picked him up, so I'm walking the walk too.
Yeah, and you were right. Jeff did have a tweet from March where Graceffo hit 100 per the TrackMan at the game he was at, but it was a lot of 97s and 98s, which from what I've seen of him, he is pretty much parked in the upper 90s. And with all those secondary pitches, I mean, that could just be a deadly combination. So now would be the time, I think, to add Graceffo, even in leagues where maybe 200 prospects are rostered. I think he's comfortably going to be inside my top 200 on the next update, assuming he stays healthy.
Yeah, last year his average fastball was 94.6. Max was 98. So it looks like he's, you know, added some velocity there. Looking at our top 500 coming out, two of us have him inside the 200, one of us inside the 300. So kind of early 200s.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, these pitching prospects are different for me than hitting prospects in terms of how quickly I'm willing to fully buy in on a guy, because pitching prospects just show you how good they are, and you only have to see them for one start, really, and the pitches kind of add up to what they are. Whereas a hitter, you need, you know, all that data to really kind of feel confident about a guy. But with a pitching prospect like this, I mean, that there's no reason why he couldn't finish the year even at AAA, honestly, and be set for an early 2023 debut. So, you know, pitching is really coveted in some dynasty leagues. So definitely run out and grab him if that's the case in yours. Who's your next guy?
So I went another pitcher. He just got promoted to high A for the Braves. It's Roiber Salinas. 21-year-old at low A so far, 56% strikeouts, 0.93 whip, 23.4% swinging strike rate. He's just like racking up the Ks. The one thing or two things maybe to be worried about are he's kind of round in body shape. So I don't know how that'll hold up. And his control isn't the greatest. There was this one game where he struck out 12 out of 12, or he had four innings, 12 strikeouts, so all outs by strikeout, but he also walked five, I think. So no balls in play, basically. He may, because of the control problems, he may not be a starter, so I'm maybe a little more lukewarm on his prospects, but you can't deny like the data that he's showing right now.
Yeah, that was the physique was the one kind of negative I had on him on last week's episode. I mean, the stuff is definitely electric, but I sort of got Brustar Graterol body vibes, and that can affect the command and the control. Roiber Salinas is the guy we're talking about here. But that can also lead to just, you know, back issues and stuff like that. And it can prevent a guy from really maxing out in terms of innings. So all things to watch with him. But I mean, I think you gotta add him in most dynasty leagues if he hasn't already been scooped up, just given the strikeout stuff that you alluded to. Any idea where you're gonna slot him personally on your update?
250 to 300, I think. It's because of the question marks surrounding him. You don't want to invest too heavily, but you know, you also don't want to miss out. So I think I have Graceffo a bit higher than him, like a bit better than him.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense to me too. I feel more confident that Graceffo is a starter long term. But both big time bat missers. Do you have another positive one here? I'm all out of my positive ones.
Yeah, let's see here.
All right, I couldn't remember if you sent me five or six. Or no, you got to all of them. Never mind. Yeah, right.
Yeah. But I can always just pull up Robo Scout all day.
Now we can kind of pour some cold water on some guys who are putting up huge numbers. I can start that off. Now, I think this is an everyday big leaguer at some point. I just think there's going to be a point here in the next few months where his value in Dynasty really takes a hit. That's Nolan Gorman putting up ridiculous numbers, counting stats wise, at least at AAA. And he is young for the level. He's not even 22 yet. He turns 22 in a few days. 11 home runs in 21 games. Obviously, as you'd expect, the hard hit data is great on him. But, you know, for people who were maybe not buying his org mate, Tyler O'Neill, in redraft because of the approach, well, just imagine if you had that approach at AAA and then what that approach might look like against big league pitching. We discussed how big the gap is. You know, you have a guy like Cal Mitchell striking out less than 12% of the time, and you have Nolan Gorman striking out 35% of the time and not even walking 8% of the time. To me, that's just a recipe for major struggles against big league pitching whenever he does get that opportunity. So, you know, I don't think this isn't rocket science, right? Like, I think people in dynasty leagues are going to know that, you know, the hit tool maybe isn't that great, at least right now. But I do still think this might be the time to try to sell him if you can get him to be valued as kind of a top 30 prospect overall. Like, I would make that move. Like, if you could trade Nolan Gorman for Michael Harris, I would make that move today because I do think he will get an opportunity here sometime this summer. And I don't think he will do that well. And then at that point, people are going to have some concerns. And I think he might be a post-hype guy next year. Like, I'm not saying that he's never going to amount to anything. I just think there's going to be some growing pains against big league pitching.
Yeah, it's he's a tough one. Same with the guy I'm going to pick. It's the same idea. Robo Scout has Gorman as a 100 at AAA because the power is just through the roof. But like you said, the strikeout rate's so high. I do a weekly Robo Scout update article, and I talked about it. That strikeout rate obviously puts pressure on the batting average, but it's not really correlated to WRC plus. I looked at Joey Gallo had a 36% K rate in AAA and 660 total plate appearances. Obviously, he's carved out a career. I mean, he has monster power. Gorman's is pretty got good raw as well. So, in a batting average league, yes, I totally agree. It's not going to look pretty, but it's just, you can't really deny that the power is just so elite right now, the power output. So it's tough. I totally understand. I totally agree with everything you're saying. I think he has a very high chance of flaming out. But right now, like, the numbers are suggesting he could still carve out a major league career.
Yeah, I totally buy that. Like, I think he could have a like a Mike Moustakas type of career, which would be nothing to sneeze at. I'm very interested in just why his strikeout rate has gone through the roof like this. When you look at what he did last year, I mean, I knew obviously coming out of the draft, the hit tool was the big question with him. So I think he might be maybe, and that's the thing, like the environment at AAA, it's so easy to put up monster numbers there that it can maybe mess with a guy's whole approach, because he's maybe developing bad habits while having extreme success. And so it's, you're not going to necessarily change what you're doing if you're Nolan Gorman and you're hitting 317 with a 427 ISO, right? Like, why would you change what you're doing when you're having that kind of success? But I think if he kept that same approach in the majors, there would be struggle. So I'm definitely not saying he's going to be a long-term bust. I just think he's, there's going to be a point here in the next few months where his value takes a dip, unless he can just really start making some improvements here at AAA. And he's certainly, he has age on his side. He's ahead of schedule. So, I mean, he could head back to AAA next year and he'd be 22. So it's not like he's under the gun to make these changes happen overnight or anything like that.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting that. I wasn't challenging your assessment at all. I totally agree. It was more of a rumination of like, how do we handle these guys? Because yeah, I could see that path that you're talking about play out. But like, I don't want to necessarily miss out on a Gallo type season or career.
All right, who is your prospect that you're not fully buying what he's selling right now?
Yeah, so it looks like it's a Cardinals prospect. It's Moises Gomez, former Tampa Bay Ray. Same idea as Gorman, incredible pop. They were tied for home runs, the home run lead a couple days ago. I think Moises actually is in front now with 12. 28.8% strikeout rate, 245 WRC plus. So again, it's like his output is so transcendent that it kind of overcomes the strikeout rate. And so RoboScout has him as a 95 in AA, tied with Ezekiel Tovar. But everything you said, exactly the same, except Gomez's track record is not as high being able to do this. So obviously a bigger chance of flaming out than Gorman. He's in AA, so he's a year behind. He's also 23 years old, so he's older. I still would take a flyer on him and have him in your kind of churn and burn slot in a dynasty league, because you don't want to miss out in case, you know, he kind of does what Pete Alonso did or whatever and comes up and dominates right from the beginning. But, you know, don't expect that it's going to be a sure thing at all.
Yeah, I mean, he's almost 2 years older than Gorman. And like you said, he's a level behind him. The way I would put it is like Gomez is definitely going to be added to my top 400. On the next update, but I'm not going to have him ranked in a place where it's like, you got to go at this guy. You know, he's also kind of a tough fit defensively. I don't really think, unless the scouting report has changed, I don't really think he's a value add in the outfield. So really going to have to do all the work with his bat. So you got to watch that hit tool a little bit. Should we talk about some big leaguers that we were super right about and super wrong about?
Sure, why not?
How do we want to do this? Should we do good first or bad first?
Doesn't matter.
Let's do bad first. So I was looking back at my NFBC player shares from before the season. And both of these guys are pitchers, my good one and my bad one are pitchers who were who I was getting either just inside the top 300 or just outside the top 300 in redraft leagues. And they, you know, the idea is if you load up on pitchers in that range and you hit on a few, that can really kind of carry your staff and do a lot of heavy lifting there. And every year there's guys in that range that really pop. But this first guy has not popped. And in fact, he's been so bad that I dropped him like a week into the season in AL labor, which is not necessarily something that happens very often. I wouldn't imagine in that league on guys that people bought for $4 in the auction, but I basically just saw one start from Carlos Hernandez of the Royals, and I was just like, nope, not wasn't right about this call. And I was all over Hernandez even before Rob Silver like kind of pumped him up at on the PitchCon thing. So this wasn't that was more kind of someone smart sort of confirming a bias that I had on Carlos Hernandez taking a step forward this year. And it's kind of an organizational wide issue. The Royals just have really struggled to develop pitching. Sal Perez was the worst framer in baseball last year, so that's not helping either. But Hernandez's command is just so bad that it doesn't really matter how good his stuff is, at least at this stage of his development. Maybe he can figure some things out, but Hernandez was one of my four most rostered players in NFBC leagues. I traded for him in a dynasty league over the offseason, and he's basically a cut for me in almost any format at this point.
Yeah, so I played with Alex Chamberlain's pitch leaderboard in the offseason, doing that exercise I was just talking about, the StatCast with the minor leaguers. So taking the ex-WOBA and the whiff percentage per pitch, and then giving it a 2080 grade. And I tweeted about this actually in January that in 2021, there were six pitchers that had five pitches that were all average or better. So 50 or better. Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, Walker Buehler, Charlie Morton, Luis Garcia, and then Carlos Hernandez. So I was kind of all in too. I was not expecting this kind of fall off. In fact, he would be kind of one of my sleepers, obviously, using that same metric. Right. So that's a shame.
Yeah. I mean, it was very easy to just sort of look at the ingredients in his arsenal and maybe even like watch some of his starts when things were working for him last year. And like when he's on, he looks very impressive. It's pretty painful to watch him pitch at this point. So, that one, I was super wrong on that one, but you know, when you're taking a pitcher, when you're loading up on a pitcher who is probably going like 330 or something like that in drafts. When you load up on a pitcher there and you're wrong, you can just cut your losses and move on. And hopefully you didn't do too much damage to your ratios.
Yeah, so my guy, my bust, same thing I said before about contact versus exit velocity. A guy who always showed up in the last couple of years but hadn't been able to play a full season was Ketel Marte. Always liked him, always good contact, 280, 300 hitter. The exit velocity is always good, so it's like expected home runs or whatever would always be high. And so I took him, I tried to target him in all my dynasties, wasn't that successful. I took him in the fifth round in TGFBI. I was pleased as punch to do so, and he has just been terrible. The Diamondbacks signed him to the extension as well. So, you know, appealing to authority, I thought, you know, they know that he's in for the long haul and he's going to have a nice, good career. So that just made me more confident, and it's been terrible so far.
Do you think it's something that he's going to kind of work himself out of?
Well, I certainly hope so. He actually has done pretty good the last couple of days. I think he was 2 for 2 just before I came on the pod today with 2 runs. So I hope he's turning it around. He was batting second, and now he's sort of like sixth or seventh, and he's had a few off days too. So I think they're just trying to get him right. I think he had an eye issue in spring training too. So maybe that's bothering him, maybe from one side of the plate. I haven't really dug in on the splits, but I think he's going to be, you know, average at least. But I don't know if he's going to return that fifth round value that I was hoping for.
Yeah, I remember before the season, you could look at their projected lineups, and it was just like there's Ketel Marte, and then there's just this giant cliff to whoever you think their second best hitter is. So you can bank on the playing time, you can bank on the spot in the lineup and everything. And here we are. But yeah, I mean, I think he's got to be a pretty solid buy low target right now. The one that I so far have nailed, but he's a pitcher, and so things can go poorly very quickly. But Eric Lauer of the Milwaukee Brewers, just, you know, I didn't see the velocity increase coming, so you know, there's some luck involved with hitting on this one, and I wasn't expecting him to be basically like the ace of the teams that I have him on, but he was, I think, my second most rostered player just because of the cost and what I perceived to be a very high start-to-start floor, especially given the team context and the division and everything. He made some adjustments to his arsenal in terms of how often he was throwing stuff last season, kind of halfway through the season, and he was just awesome over about a 70-inning sample, and it looked legitimate to me. I thought he was probably their fourth best pitcher coming into the year, either him or Ashby, and that increased velocity up to 94 average on the fastball, and the swing and miss breaking balls, I mean, he's just been outstanding. So that one paid off. I mean, if you have one Carlos Hernandez and one Eric Lauer, it's going to be, you're going to still come out ahead on that. So been happy with that one.
Yeah, I don't have any Eric Lauer anywhere, and it's makes no sense why. He was one of my sleepers, him and Nestor Cortez and Luis Gil. So I'm not perfect on that, but I don't have any of them anywhere. I do this in season sort of every other day, download from Fangraphs, plug into my spreadsheet, and I do all sorts of like expected metrics sorting stuff. And I have Eric Lauer right now as like the 12th best pitcher rest of season. Like, it's kind of ridiculous just what he's showing right now, and I try to regress that too, so it's not just small sample size stuff, and it's just he's definitely someone I regret not having anywhere.
Lauer and like the four pitchers that I have the most, there are my most rostered players were Carlos Hernandez, Lauer, Detmers, and Nestor Cortez. So two big hits, sort of a TBD on Detmers, and then a big miss on Hernandez. But was it just, were you kind of like getting cute in drafts and just hoping that they would kind of fall to their ADP? How'd you miss out?
No, that's exactly what I did. It's especially my TGFBI league. It's just the draft was just so, everyone was sniping me like one round before they were quote unquote supposed to go, or that, you know, I was kind of confident that I'd be able to get them at, and it really threw me for a loop. So I lost Lau. I didn't get Edward Cabrera, which was, you know, maybe so far okay, but Seiya Suzuki, all these guys were, I was getting sniped a few rounds before I was hoping to get them, and it really threw me for a loop.
You mentioned TGFBI. You and I were chatting about that. That's a competition that you and I have historically done quite well in. If your colleague Smada still did his adjusted all-time leaderboard, I think you and I would probably be top three, top five, something like that, all time. We were both kind of commiserating over the fact that our teams are kind of middle of the pack and not doing so hot. But your team has really caught fire here over the last few days. Who's really been lifting your squad?
It was all in the last day. I was 175th yesterday, and now I'm 55 or something like that. I got three wins. It's really Aaron Judge is the guy who's carrying my team right now. No thanks to the aforementioned Ketel Marte or even Joey Votto, who's just been killing me. But yeah, it's just pure luck. So I think if you're not feeling so hot about your team, don't give up, because you can gain 120 points, 120 spots in the overall overnight, literally overnight. So it's clearly way too early to think time to pack it in or to give yourself a pat on the back.
Yeah. So, I mean, the funny thing about my rough start is that the two probably biggest culprits are guys that I would have thought before the season were maybe sort of the safer veteran players on my team. I stupidly took Whit Merrifield. What was that, like early third or something like that? I'd never take Whit Merrifield, and I started with Trey Turner, and I really wanted to get the steals for the overall prize and lock up my batting average. And Whit Merrifield's just been terrible. And that was just a really stupid pick for a variety of reasons. But like I got Jazz later. And so with Turner and Jazz, you know, I kind of had the speed I needed from the middle infield. So I just didn't need Merrifield, what he was projected to give me. And my team is just terrible in terms of power. And I just totally whiffed on that. I should have taken some sort of power hitter there. And that was a huge mistake. But then the other guy who's really let me down is Charlie Morton, who I would have thought would have been just incredibly rock solid this year. And I think he will turn it around. But yeah, I'm just kind of treading water, middle of the pack, nowhere near you in the overall, but hopefully that'll change. All right. Dylan, why don't you let people know one more time where they can subscribe to the Robo Scout feature at Prospects Live.
Yeah, so we have a bunch of tiers in our Patreon at Prospects Live. Robo Scout is in the $10 per month tier. Updated weekly. I have an update, like an article that accompanies it where it's like big movers, who I'm taking, who I'm not taking, who I'm not buying into, what size league type of thing. We have an incredible amateur draft team who've done their top 400. We're coming up with our top 500. Like I said, probably by next week. We got live looks. We got big news. We just signed a podcast of Cole Wilcox, minor league prospect Cole Wilcox, as part of our Prospects Live network.
Cool.
That just came today. So a lot of big things happening. My Twitter is The Arrival with two underscores between The and Arrival. A terrible handle, but sticking with it.
Can't change it now.
Yeah, exactly. Because of all my followers will get confused. but that's where I am right now.
Are you going to... Because you weren't with Prospects Live last year for the mock draft that they do every year, right? Are you gonna get to GM a team for that this year?
I don't really feel comfortable enough with my body of knowledge for that. But if they ask me to, of course I'll join in. But I'd have to give a lot of caveats that you know, I'm the wrong guy to do it. Like Ruben Amaro.
Well, yeah, definitely subscribe, support Prospects Live via their Patreon. They do really good work, a bunch of really good people over there. Love doing stuff with those guys. And Dylan's Robo Scout tool is worth that Patreon price alone. And then be on the lookout for their big updated prospect rankings, which it sounds like are going to be out before mine are. I'm hoping to get mine done maybe like the Monday or Tuesday before Memorial Day weekend. But I assume the Prospects Live ones are going to be out even before then. So no better time than to go over to Prospects Live and sign up for their Patreon. Really appreciate you joining me, Dylan. This was a ton of fun, and hopefully we can catch up soon.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks, James.
All right, this has been the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. I'm James Anderson. I'll be back next week.